Good morning. Let's all take a deep breath. That feels good. Today's gospel reading is sometimes referred to as Mark's little apocalypse. Not because it's a small teaching by any means, but because it's short and not so sweet, just like the rest of Mark's book. I'd like to talk to you about apocalypse today for a couple of reasons. First, I know that apocalypse is a loaded word, a word that gets thrown around in religious circles and in the culture in careless and even sometimes in dangerous ways. And I think that there's a basic misunderstanding of what apocalyptic writing is trying to tell us. The second reason is that there is anxiety in the world right now that is fueled by the sense that maybe we are in an apocalyptic time. And my feeling is that that is true, but not in the way that we might think. When you hear the word apocalypse, what do you think of? What images come to mind? Four horsemen, a new Jerusalem, the coming of the Antichrist, a blood-red moon signaling the end of the world, the rapture, whatever that is. Undeniably, they are all there, scattered out through the scriptures and explicitly in the Revelation to John, a book that made it into our Bible in spite of the objection of many in the course of building the Bible as we know it. We tend to think about apocalypse as a prophecy of the end times, the day of judgment, when God stops all the nonsense that humanity has wrought in creation since the beginning of time, or at the very least, since Adam and Eve were tempted by the serpent. A very strange and prevalent reading in certain circles of Christianity has turned a book and a few passages of Scripture into literal stories of the end times, and has turned these stories into dogma. It has said, here are the signs. Keep an eye out for them. Be afraid. Be very afraid, because the end is coming, maybe soon, maybe tomorrow, or maybe in a couple of months, but it's coming. Be afraid. And I'd like to remind us all, me included, that ever since the dawn of Christianity and before, going back into the Jewish scriptures, we heard an apocalyptic writing from Daniel today. People have been living sometimes in fear and sometimes in hope of the end of the world. There have been signs interpreted by smart, though not always well-meaning people, that catastrophe was on the horizon, or that catastrophe had already happened, and that now we are watching the end play out. That kind of apocalyptic thinking and the behaviors that it leads to only lead, from what I've seen, mostly lead to depression, despair, and false hope. I can fall into that kind of thinking, and that thinking and feeling seem to be part of human nature, at least maybe especially in the West, where we're so goal and future oriented that we're blinded to what lies right before us. But this idea that apocalypse means, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the complete final destruction of the world as described in the biblical book of Revelation. That's the way we usually think of apocalypse, and I believe that we need to abandon that idea because it doesn't really fit with Jesus' message in a meaningful way. So let's consider Mark's little apocalypse. Jesus and his friends have been in the temple in Jerusalem. He's been verbally sparring with the scribes and the Pharisees. And we've heard about what happened in the temple that day in the last couple of Sunday's gospel readings. As they're leaving the temple, one of his disciples, one of his friends and followers, stops him and says, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." He wasn't wrong. The temple was a huge gilded stone building, magnificent and imposing. And as a former builder and a lover of architecture, I can imagine myself wanting to stop and admire the temple and to share my awe of the planning it took to design it and the work that it took to build it, and to want to share that moment of love, that moment of awe with my friend and my teacher. Look at this. Look at what our people have managed to build to the glory of God and to the glory of ourselves. I wouldn't have been ready either for what came next out of Jesus' mouth. "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left upon the other. All will be thrown down." "Wait, what? Do you mean, Jesus, that this structure that we have spent generations building is going to fall? That everything that we believe in, everything we have come to rely on, these stones, this building that has been so carefully constructed, is going to be reduced to rubble?" The disciple didn't say that, but I'll bet that's what was in his heart. And that's what is in many people's hearts today. Fear of the future. Fear that the lives and the edifices that have been so carefully constructed, that seem so solid and immutable, will someday crumble. The fear is real. The reality is also, everything that is old is falling apart, falling away. Can you feel it? Then there's this beautiful movement in the story where Jesus takes his closest friends, his besties, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, to the Mount of Olives across from the temple, and he sits down with them to rest and to talk. They ask him the question that perhaps occurs to us, the readers: when will this happen? What will be the sign? How will we know that the end is near? I think Jesus probably smiled, not at their ignorance, but rather with compassion, because he knew what a hard lesson he had to give them and how much it would pain them to hear it. He says, "Look around you. It's already happening. It's always been happening. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famine." Well, from what I know about the history of humanity, that is a pretty apt description of our story. And I don't mean in an eschatological way. I don't mean that, oh, all of history has led us to this point, and yes, we have finally come to the end of the world. That's not what I mean. I mean that I think we keep deluding ourselves, thinking that we have finally gotten it right, and that our structures and systems are going to last forever. apparently, God has other plans. Because even the gilded temple falls. I wish it weren't true, because I want at least a measure of certainty in my life, and I'll bet that you do too. It would be pretty bleak, Jesus' little apocalypse, according to Mark, if that was the end, if we were left only with a description of chaos and destruction that feels like the end of the world. Because there's something more, something better contained in this story. We must read all the way to the end of the passage. That's where the promise is. And it's not a small promise. Even though we're living in chaos, whether in our personal lives or in a chaotic world, it's all a necessary part of the process of death and birth. Resurrection, if you will. It is our story, so terribly and beautifully embodied in the life of Jesus. I don't mean that it's only the story from which we build our faith. I mean, it is literally our story. Death, chaos, disintegration precede new birth. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs, maybe one of the wisest, most hopeful, and beautiful things that Jesus ever said. That's what I try to hold in my heart when I'm hurting and confused, when I can't see any hope. It hurts, and it is true. Apocalypse has come to mean the end of the world, but that's not the original meaning of the word, which was apocalypse, to uncover the truth, to pull the veil of illusion from our eyes, to see the world and to see ourselves as we truly are. I don't know how much literal or even allegorical truth is contained in John's apocalypse. I have a difficult relationship with that book, but I do know that there is deep spiritual truth to be found in today's passage from Mark. When we are most afraid, when our inner chaos matches the chaos that we perceive in the world around us, it is hard to believe that life will get any better. It's hard not to believe that this is the end of the world. I know because I've been there at times in my life. And at those times, friends have assured me that things will work out in the end, that God doesn't give us anything that we can't handle. It didn't help. In fact, it only made me feel worse, like I was somehow deficient because I couldn't buck up. And Jesus isn't telling us to buck up here or anywhere else in the gospel that I can discern. What Jesus always offers us is hope. All through the gospels, he tells us over and over, don't be afraid. Peace be with you. Love one another as I have loved you. Love your enemies. Now there's the rub. Jesus tells us these things knowing full well that we will sometimes, if not often, fail, forgiving us when we do, encouraging us to try again. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs. New life is being born, and it's painful. And we can't go around it. We have to go through it. Death and birth, chaos and order, estrangement and forgiveness, the powers of the world and the powers of a God whom we know to be love, all these seeming opposites are one. And they are fully manifest in Jesus, in his life and death and resurrection. In the Garden of Gethsemane, where he was alone, struggling with God as his friends slept. Hanging on the cross, halfway between heaven and earth, life and death, death and rebirth, he held all the contraries that we experience in this human life in his very body. He knew what was coming when he told his disciples that the whole structure of human construction will be torn down sooner or later. He told them that chaos and death is not the end, but rather the beginning of new life. Now, to a skeptic, I'm sure that this all sounds like wishful thinking. I get that. I lived most of my life in skepticism. Something in me changed when I started hanging around St. John's Episcopal Church, around you people who have shown me how to live a life of connection. You all model that to me every day, and for that I am grateful. Now, connection doesn't mean that we will all see eye to eye about everything. In fact, real connection means that often we won't agree. Sometimes about hard topics, sometimes even topics that are nearest to our hearts. It's just a fact. A skeptic would walk away from that kind of connection. But that's the easy route. Having faith is harder, because it means hanging together in chaotic times. Remember, though, these times, all times known to humanity, are in their own ways chaotic. Something new is being born, and I have no idea what it will look like. Nobody does. But my goal is to hang with you through it, and to hang with my brothers and sisters of every race, creed, color, and persuasion until we find out what it is that is being born. Amen.